everybody, and welcome to Around Town. I'm your host, Ron Giordano, and we have special guests today. You're listening to 101.5 FM, your Huntley Community Radio Station. We have Susan, and Elise with us from Options and Advocacy of McHenry County. Ladies, welcome to Around Town.
Hi, thank you.
So who's going to be my lead speaker here?
Susan.
Susan number two, okay. All right, Susan, you're on.
All right. So Options and Advocacy, we support McHenry County. We've been in the community since 1994. This December marks our 29th anniversary. Currently, we have three core programs. We have the Autism Resource Center, the Helping Us Grow program, which is a prevention initiative program, and Child and Family Connections, which is the early intervention program in McHenry County.
And where is that center located, Susan?
All three of these programs are located in Crystal Lake, Illinois.
Okay. And as far as the other options that you have there, resources and referrals and things like that, can you tell us about that?
Sure. So we have a couple of extra things that we offer to our community. We have the SIB shops. And so SIB shops are for any sibling who has a brother or sister with a cognitive or physical disability, and they can attend those when the school year is going on. So that starts up in August and ends in about in May. It's once a month.
And how do you do your autism screenings? How does that work?
So that would be me.
Susan, number one. Okay, there we go.
So the autism screenings are offered about once a month. Parents come in with their child, and we do a play observation. We also interview the child. Along with that, we have the family fill out a couple different autism rating scales that we score, and takes about an hour and a half. And then after that, we'll generally give a feedback right then to the parent, and then if necessary, we'll refer the parent to further assessments at a hospital or another diagnostic location to get further information. These are not diagnoses. They are screenings that we provide to indicate the possibility that there's autism, but they really need to follow up with a professional to get that diagnostic.
But once that's done, aren't there places they can go to where they can begin to train them for when they become older and they go out in society and do things, or they can have placements and things like that?
Absolutely. So they can receive those services through the Autism Resource Center, which is part of Options and Advocacy. And we serve basically through the lifespan. I would say the bulk of our clients are school age. So we're helping in the school. We're helping also in the community, in the home, and providing all sorts of supports to help that child progress and grow, as research shows that the earlier we can intervene, the better the long-term outcome.
You know, from what I read, and I'm not sure if it's accurate or not, but it seems like either we're recognizing it sooner or there's a rise in autism. Which one would it be?
Oh, that's a great debate. I think it's probably... I would lean towards we're recognizing it more. I think it also has expanded. Like it used to be the most severe cases were the most widely recognized. And now through several years of research and study, we found that we can look a little bit more closely and find some things that might have just been considered only speech might be an autism-related auditory processing type situation going on for that individual. The other key to that is all the research was done on boys and men previously, and boys still tend to be diagnosed more than girls, but girls are also being diagnosed more now. We figured out girls present a little bit differently, so that's being added to that count of how many people have that diagnosis.
Okay. And what is your program, what you call Hug Points?
That's my program, Helping Us
That's
Grow.
That's Elise's
yeah.
program. Okay, Elise.
Yeah, so we are a prevention initiative home visiting program. So what that means is we're trying to get in with some of those families that might be experiencing additional life stressors. And that could be a variety of different things. We help support the family through that difficult job of being a parent and being either a new parent, a veteran parent, but adding a new child into your life. So we are doing weekly or biweekly visits with the family. So we will go into their home or where they feel comfortable and just help support in whatever goals they've kind of indicated for themselves. These could be goals for the child. These could be goals for the parents. These could be goals for the family. So it looks very different between the families that we serve. But the ultimate goal is just providing that extra level of support.
So we have three young ladies here today from this organization. How large is your staff?
About 35. So each program's a little bit different. I have six home visitors and a part-time assistant. And then the service coordinators with the Child and Family Connections, there's about 13.
All together, our team, we have 15 on our team.
And then autism.
I think we have about six or seven right now.
Yep.
Okay. And the same applies for you, Susan, number one?
As far as the program?
Yeah, the staff and...
Oh, yes. So our program's a little bit different. So it's Bureau of Early Intervention. We're one of 25 CFCs within the state. And so our program is really looking at the development of the child. So we're looking at birth to three. Any child birth to three that might have some developmental concerns, they come to our program. And then we assign them to a service coordinator, and the service coordinator would then work with the family to schedule evaluations.
What have you found the way in which people can locate your organization? Because I'm sure a lot of people don't know that you exist, mm-hmm. that you're out there. How do they go about finding? I mean, word of mouth is one thing, but mm-hmm. what if you're brand new or you're not sure and you're kind of, you know, floating around? How do they find you?
Well, a lot of, I think, referrals that come to us are really from the pediatrician's office. I mean, for all of our programs, I think they do have a little bit of an awareness of what we do in McHenry County. But, you know, we have a website, we have a Facebook page, we have an Instagram page. So, you know, we're trying to just let our community know that we're here for them. It is no cost to a family to come and get services at our programs. So just, you know, trying to get the word out there.
So would you like to tell me a little bit about, and all the folks out there, about your family support specialist?
Yeah, those are my home visitors.
That's Elise again.
Elise,
okay.
Home visitors.
All right.
So I do have six of them right now, and those are the people who would be on the ground in the field with the families. So we really try to make those connections. We feel that we support families the best when we have that relationship, that we're building those relationships with the family. Most of the time, we feel part of the family, and it's really hard to see them go when the kiddos turn three and we have to transition them out. But yeah, those are the people that would be coming to the homes to work with the families. They're very empathetic, non-judgmental. They love what they do, and it really does show in them that relationship building that they do with the families.
Oh, that's great. That warms your heart when you hear things like that, because yeah, it's understandable. And I see you've had some past pizza parties. That's always
yes.
a lot of fun.
Yes. So we do monthly group connections for our families, and that's really to help build that sense of community, that broaden their circle of support, so they get to see other families that may be experiencing similar situations. Might have kids the same age, might also be working parents, might also be stay-at-home parents. But we try to get together once a month, and we also take the monetary factor out of doing an event together. We know things can get really, really pricey if you have two, three, four kids. So we try to have them participate in a group family activity, and it's no cost to them. So yep, our pizza parties are always been a big success. We have done those via Zoom, so we'll get together around dinner time. We provide the family with all the materials to make their own pizzas at home and really facilitate that parent-child interaction. We're seeing that parents are getting the kids involved in the task of cooking dinner. You have to cook dinner every night, so why don't have the kids be involved and help in really building that connection between the parents and
child? How do you tie in the nutrition factors?
Yeah, so we start with a little bit of a presentation. We do a couple slideshows just talking about the different requirements that kiddos should be getting at this age, what that looks like for babies versus toddlers versus older kiddos. And then we kind of have an open discussion too, where we might share some suggestions with each other. So a parent who has a picky eater might have another parent that said, hey, try this. This is how I got my kid to eat strawberries, or this is how I got my kid to get more vegetables, because you know vegetables
or
are
broccoli.
Not fun. Yes.
Or green beans. Right. Yeah,
so right. Putting some of that, you know, spinach in a smoothie to mask the taste of it. We've had some really cool group conversations just about different suggestions.
And how about the music and movement portion?
Yes, we have loved working with Rockin' Kids. Again, we will contract them to come out and do a session with us. And that has been a really, really fun time, again, taking that monetary factor. They don't have to pay for the class. Our families are free to participate. We've done it at the Three Oaks Recreation Center. We rented that pavilion. It was a beautiful location. Just spent the afternoon doing a music movement. We know that kids love to work on those motor skills, jumping around, listening to music, dancing. And then we did cater a lunch for all the families as well.
The last year you served 81 families and 103 children.
Yes.
That's quite a few families to serve.
Yeah, so we can serve up to 85 is our current capacity. And again, families can come and go. It's a voluntary program. So if they need support for 3 months, if they need support for 3 years, that's okay. But yeah, we've served a lot and we're probably on track to do a little bit more than that this year.
And Elise, how about your bilingual support?
Yes, Miss Kiersey is her name. She is absolutely fabulous. She works with our Spanish-speaking families. And we do like to mention that their immigration status does not matter to be part of our program. So we know there's some limitations for families that are experience immigration issues that they can not access some community services. And all of the programs at Options and Advocacy allow for that. They don't take in that into consideration.
And how about when you get into what you folks call your CFC points?
That would be Susan.
Yes. Okay. Susan, you're on.
Okay. So, an early intervention, again, what I had mentioned, birth to three, any child with some type of concern for their development. Children can be eligible for our program based on some medical diagnosis that they might come in. And so we're thinking about maybe a seizure disorder, Down syndrome, a chromosomal disorder. And then most children that come into our program, they do show a 30% delay in one of the five areas we're looking at. And so we do have one other area that a child could come into our program with, and that would be more of like an at-risk. So if a parent might have some type of mental health challenges, homelessness, they could be eligible for our program. As far as when a child is referred to our program, we have 45 days from the day that we get the referral to the day that we do the eligibility and we evaluate the child and see if they're eligible for our program. They do, again, have to have a 30% or more delay or that medical piece, medical diagnosis, or an at-risk factor in order to receive services. What else do I want to tell you?
Sorry. Well, let me ask you this. How do you work with or determine a child that has autism or has another symptom that you can't identify? Sometimes kids, they show things, but you're not quite sure what it is that you're showing, like Asperger's. Could it be that instead of autism? How do you detect that?
So our program really doesn't do that. We're really looking at the development of the child and how it's impacting their daily routines with their families. We do have, there's 16 services that we offer in early intervention, and one of those services is called medical diagnostics. And so a child, if there is a concern that they could potentially have autism or something else going on that we don't necessarily know as a team what's going on, we can refer them to medical diagnostics, and then there's a whole team looking at them, and that's a service covered through early intervention.
For the folks out there, you're listening to 101.5 FM, your Huntley Community Radio Station. We're talking to Susan 1, Susan 2, and Elise from Options and Advocacy from McHenry County. I know that sometimes working with Asperger's is so different than autism. It's a whole different scenario altogether because the learning points are so much different. So I think that's something probably creates challenges for you to determine, how far you can go, what you can do, and how you can help out, correct?
Actually, not for us. We kind of look at autism and Asperger's as the same thing. So there's been some discussion around, I know people who are diagnosed with Asperger's want to keep that term because that's how they identify, and that's totally fine, but we kind of consider it all autism. So in the we've shifted somewhat from a spectrum of autism, like a linear perspective, to used to be like low functioning, high functioning. Now we've kind of we're looking at more of a constellation or a globe. So someone with Asperger's might have some very good skills in lots of different areas, but then they get stuck maybe in that social communication piece. So they're having struggles with communicating with coworkers and teachers and things like that. So we just kind of go in and we try to work with the individual and link them to services that will help improve their social skills. And then we'll maybe work with the employer or the teacher to be like, well, this is, you know, you may need to limit how much you say to that person or use some visuals or just take it real slow, those kinds of things, lots of repetition work. So for us, we see it all as one.
Sure. Have you seen a dramatic change from the way you treated autism and Asperger's years ago to where it is today? The approach, the techniques, are they so, are very different now?
Yes, I think initially there wasn't really anything, right? And then ABA, Applied Behavioral Analysis, became kind of the go-to. So every time a child gets, and it's still, it does happen still because it can be effective, but it doesn't always work for everyone. So now there's been a little bit of a shift from ABA for some people to emotional regulation, which is something we've developed and offer to our families at the Autism Resource Center. And that is more focusing on teaching the parent how to regulate themselves and model that regulation. So it's very typical for a child or an individual on the autism spectrum to mirror back what emotions you're showing to them. So if we can get the parent to kind of center and develop some coping skills, then that also helps the child learn those coping skills. So there, yeah, I think it's definitely grown. There's other things called CERTs and SEEKs, and these are all also things that are used across the board.
So the majority of your referrals come from pediatricians, is that correct?
In early intervention, yep. Majority, and many of those referrals are for speech concerns. We do tend to carry what we call the older caseload. We have children, typically about a third of our children are over the age of 2.5 in our program. So that means that we have to look at what's going to be the next steps for them when they get closer to 3. And so in our program, the only way a child can get really a streamlined way into the school district and get an evaluation done is by being in early intervention. So then we start that process around 2.5. And then about 3 months before the child's 3rd birthday, we meet with the local school district representatives and we have a transition meeting and we, you know, talk to the family about, you know, what do you want to see your child doing at 3? If they are eligible for school programs, special education services, would you want them to attend that? So that is a really important to us that we help families go through that process, because for some of our families, their children are going to be in special education until they're 21 or, you know, close to 22.
Sure.
So we want to make sure that we have really positive relationships with our local school districts to facilitate that.
Have you had children come back that you've worked with and now they're maybe 16, 17 years old? Have you seen those kids? Have they come back to visit?
Not so, well, maybe to visit. I don't know if you maintain those connections. But for us, yes, we have, because we serve, we're a little bit different from those that are that from HUG and COC. We do serve through the lifespan. So we have families that have stayed with us since the child was probably referred to us from CFC. So at 3 years old, and now they're maybe 10 or 12, and we're still working. Or sometimes things flare up, and we work really hard with a family for a period of time, and then things get better. So they go away, and we don't see them for a while. And then maybe something comes up again, and they're back with us for a bit. So it's for us, it's, yeah, we have sometimes that longevity with a family.
So tell us a little bit about your thoughts here about your primary interventionist with families. How does that work?
Is that all of us?
Yes, we kind of all do a little bit of that. we all kind of understand the fact that the earlier we get in to work with kiddos and families, the better off they are in the longevity of their life. That's why it's called early intervention, and also the prevention as well. So we're really thinking about wanting to get in and working with those families and those kiddos as soon as possible. So any referrals to the programs are 100% welcome. You don't have to get a referral from a pediatrician. You don't have to get a referral from any sort of outside source. You can call yourself and refer your family to receive services from us.
How does it work cost-wise? Because I'm sure families are worried about, gee, can I afford this? No matter whether they have a good medical program or not. You know, how does that play into this whole thing?
Zero cost. All of our programs are free. Once you get to
in early intervention, our program is of no cost from the evaluation process until we figure out if that child is eligible. Once that child's eligible and we create a family service plan with the families, then there is a potential of a family fee. It's based on gross income and family size. Since March of 2020, the Bureau has put that family fee on hold through COVID. We do know that come July 1, there is going to be a restart of the family fee. We just don't know all of that information yet.
So your support then comes from donations primarily or grants?
Grants.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, we're all funded differently, though, so that's the interesting part.
The Autism Resource Center is funded solely by grants. Our primary grant is from the McHenry County Mental Health Board, but we also have been awarded grants from the Community Foundation for the past 1 or 2 years, I think it is. And then the whole agency does a lot of fundraising. So we have periodic events for families. In the fall, we have gone to Kingston, done family bowling. We have a fundraiser coming up, if I can make a little plug, on April 2nd.
If you have something coming up, let's tell the folks about it now.
Yeah, so April 2nd, we're partnering with the organization that does the Santa Run every December, and we're doing a Mardi Gras Run for the Beads, I think it's called, on April 2nd, and that registration is now open. You can find it, I don't know if there's a link on our website just yet, but we're in the process of that. But if you go to raceroster.com, I think you'll find it on there as well.
So let's go over the location again. Is where?
Lippold
Park in Crystal Lake is where the run will take place.
Okay, and can they call if they want more information or just go to the website?
Absolutely.
They and what number
us.
Would they call?
815-477-4720.
We should probably do that again.
Okay, 815-477-4720.
And when you do attend the event, what does it all entail?
Sure. So I'm a little fuzzy on all the details, but there is a 5K run. I believe there's a fun run for the little ones. So just a short little fun family run. I think you can walk if you don't want to run. So there's a variety of activities for everyone.
And now, are you selling tickets for that? Is the house working?
Registration.
And I think with registration, as long as you register, I think before the middle of March, you'll also get a t-shirt included with your registration. So that's
it's the first
fun.
Year they're doing this one, too.
Yes, it is.
Wow. Do you have t-shirts like for our station manager here, Jim?
I'm sure we could find
get
something.
One.
he loves t-shirts. We have to dress them up all the time. What are some of the other things that you think people should know that aren't aware of about your organization? But we're getting short on time, but I want people to know more about your organization, things that should get out there that they don't know about.
I would just add that all of our programs are really good about community resources as well and connecting families to community resources. So if they are in need of lists of food pantries or diaper banks or counseling services, other support systems like that, you can always just call to receive some of that information too. We're really trying to help families as best we can and meeting them where they're at. And if those are the supports that they need, we'll definitely try to steer them in the right direction.
Would that be the same number that Susan gave us?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
You call that number.
Yep.
In the last fiscal year, you served, 1,276 children?
We did an early intervention, absolutely, and we had 839 new referrals, and that was at the end of our fiscal year, which is June 30th. So our referrals are definitely increasing. The wonderful thing about COVID, I think we can take away, is that there's many options for our families now. It's mm-hmm. not just that we can service those families just in their home setting. We can also do it through video. So, you know, if that's an option for families and they prefer that, we can do that as well. But all of the services that we deliver are in the natural setting. And we want the family to be that primary interventionist. You know, we can have speech therapy once a week at the home, but really it's the family following through on the strategies that the therapist is giving so that they can work with their child, you know, in their daily routines.
I think that's across the board, thinking mm-hmm. of, we want the parents to be those primary interventionists. We want the parents to be the ones working with their child, and we come in to support that alongside of them and not to be the experts in the field. The parents are the experts.
Do you find that by doing Zooming or Teams calls, things like that, that the people are more comfortable and they're more willing to participate that way?
I think it really depends on the parents' you know, preference, but I feel like we make really great connections with families even through video. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that it needs to be that we have to be right next to them.
So, Susan, who are your primary donors?
Sure. So our primary donors would be specifically for the ARC program, the McHenry County Mental Health Board. We also have a grant from the Community Foundation. And then finally, agency-wide, we've been given money very generously from the Foglia Family Foundation.
Well, that's great. That's great. Well, folks, you've been listening to Susan and Elise from the Options and Advocacy Group of McHenry County. This is Huntley Community Radio Station, 101.5 FM. Go to huntleyradio.com. Contact us if you want more information. You can also listen to our shows. We stream on a regular basis, and we want to thank all you ladies for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, and folks out there, have a great day.